This is Movies for the Blind, Episode 18, Cause for Alarm, Part 1.
Mommy says tolerance is good for when you're sick.
Mm.
Daddy says it makes him sick.
Hi there, and welcome to Movies for the Blind, where you can enjoy films without looking at a screen. I'm Valerie Hunter. As promised, I am back after a week off with a new movie, and it stars Loretta Young, one of the first big movie stars to become just as popular on television. She's probably best known for The Bishop's Wife with Cary Grant and for The Farmer's Daughter, which won her an Academy Award. But in 1953, she flipped the switch and moved to television, which to many was considered a big step down. But she made it work, hosting and starring in the drama anthology The Loretta Young Show, which became a huge hit and ran for 8 seasons. She would get spoofed for starting her shows sweeping into a room in fabulous designer gowns. Maybe I should try that sometime. But she was still respected as one of the nicest and most beautiful women in Hollywood. Not much glamour for her in this movie, though, which she made with some of the people who would soon become her collaborators on the TV show, including her husband at the time, producer and co-writer Tom Lewis. From 1951, this is Cause for Alarm. Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer. Loretta Young. In Cause for Alarm. Barry Sullivan, Bruce Cowling, Margallo Gilmore. Screenplay by Mel Dinelli and Tom Lewis. Story by Larry Marcus. Music by Andre Previn. Director of Photography, Joseph Rettenberg. Art Directors, Cedric Gibbons and Arthur Lonergan. Film Editor, James E. Newcomb. Recording Supervisor, Douglas Shearer. Set Decorations, Edwin B. Willis. Associate, Alfred E. Spencer. Produced by Tom Lewis. Directed by Tay Garnett. On the picket fence surrounding a 2-story house, a sign reads, Quiet, Illness Within.
This is where I live. I'm a housewife. My name is Ellen Jones.
She plugs in a vacuum cleaner.
That Tuesday in July started out just like any other day the past few months. There was no warning it was to be the most terrifying day of my life. I remember thinking how tired I felt. Even the housework seemed drudgery, and so meaningless with George confined to his bed. No one to see or care even. And then I got scared, because I knew I was beginning to feel sorry for myself. George was the one who was ill, and he needed all of my thoughts and attention, and above all, my cheerfulness. I tried not to think about us, about George, how he'd changed. I told myself it was just my imagination, that things would be different when he was well and strong again. Then I thought I heard him call.
Turning off the vacuum, Ellen rushes to the stairs.
George, did you call? George, are you all right?
In bed, he hides a sheet of paper.
Yes, Ellen.
You want anything?
Not now. I've just begun work on an insurance report for the office.
Well, call me, dear, if you need me.
Okay.
As Ellen wipes her neck and returns to the vacuum, George retrieves the sheet of paper from under his blankets and puts it back on the tablet from which he'd torn it off. Smirking, he reads a letter he's writing to a district attorney. Dear sir, my wife and close friend, who is also my physician, are planning to kill me. He was in love with her before I met her. Downstairs, Ellen continues vacuuming.
Somehow I had an odd feeling. There was something about George's voice. I found myself thinking about the first time we'd met. How different he was in those days. I remember I was sitting in Dr. Graham's office. We were talking. I played one game of checkers and 2 games of rummy. And I'd written letters to a wife, a mother, and a sweetheart. And I listened for a half an hour to a homesick young ensign from Texas. He was awful cute. Now, what else can I do to help boost the morale around here, huh?
You could go out to dinner with me.
We'd get about halfway through the soup, and you'd get a call from the hospital.
You're right.
Mm-hmm.
I guess my courting will have to wait till after the hostilities. There's a compound fracture down the hall who's waiting to see me, but I'll be tied up for a while.
Oh?
They tell me he's feeling blue. You see, his wife's expecting a baby in a minute. And I think he could stand some cheering up.
It's practically done.
As she leaves Graham's office, George enters the patient's room.
Oh, I'm sorry. They told me I could find Dr. Graham in here.
You ought to be along any minute. Why don't you come on in?
Sure, thank you.
Are you a patient here, sir?
In a naval hospital?
No, no.
I'm just a friend of the doc's. Flew in last night with the ferry command. The only thing wrong with me is a double barrel hangover.
Too bad.
Dr. Graham will be detained, so I'm taking you for an airing.
Maybe he doesn't want to go for an airing.
He doesn't.
There's nothing a woman likes better than shoving a man around.
Pushing the patient out in his wheelchair, the nurse closes the door, leaving George sitting on the bed. He glances at the soft pillows. Then he lies back on them, pulling a sheet up over his uniform as he turns away from the door to curl up for a nap. Ellen enters, finds no one else in the room, and knocks. Wearily, George turns his head toward the door and sees her.
Hello.
Hey. Who are you?
I'm Ellen Brown.
Doesn't suit you at all. It's much too plain.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'd tell my parents about it, but they're still back in Kansas City. Now, what can I do for you, young man?
I can think of a lot of things.
Oh? Well, shall we begin with a game of cards?
Mm-mm.
Well, I could read the newspaper to you. I could write a letter for you. I know. I'll sit right here. You can tell me all about that wonderful baby you're expecting.
Hmm?
The baby you're expecting.
Does Ripley know about this?
I beg your pardon?
Skip it.
He closes his eyes and turns away.
Which is your bad leg?
Well, neither one of them's working very well today. Oh, my head.
Is your head bothering you?
Terribly. Both of them.
Would you like me to rub it for you?
He gazes at her.
You couldn't think of anything nicer.
Good. There. Now relax. Oh, close your eyes.
He does as she massages his temples.
Now just think of something pleasant. Pretty soon you'll be going home to your wife. Won't that be wonderful?
Hmm.
Think what she looks like. How pretty she is.
Lovely. Beautiful blue eyes. Short nose. Soft brown hair. And lovely, kissable lips.
He pulls her down to him.
Well, there's nothing wrong with your morale, young man. I'll recommend to the doctor that you be sent home to your wife immediately.
He takes off the sheet and sits up.
Hey, wait a minute. You're all dressed.
Naturally.
Graham enters.
Oh, George.
Hello, Ranny.
Son of a gun. What are you doing here?
Enjoying myself immensely.
His leg isn't even broken.
No?
No, it
hey,
isn't.
Hey, Doc, what kind of nurses do you have around here anyway?
Hey, what goes on here, Ellen?
Well, when I came in here, he was lying there all covered up, and he let me make an absolute idiot of myself. Rubbing his head. Both of them.
Best cure in the world for a hangover.
Ellen, this is George Jones, an old and untrustworthy friend of mine. Now, remember, I saw her first.
George Jones. The name suits you perfectly, completely undistinguished.
I wouldn't say that, honey.
He stands.
Someday you may wind up wearing it.
He kisses her forehead.
Shall we go?
Opening the door, he watches her leave in a huff.
She's cute.
Later on a beach.
It was pretty depressing having a medical student for a roommate.
Oh?
He was always dissecting something, including me.
You gotta know what's going on inside if you expect to understand the outside.
Yeah.
Excuse me, sir, but you're wanted at the hospital. There's an emergency.
Oh, Ran, I'm sorry.
So am I. Well, back to the salt mines. See you folks later.
Okay. Not if I can help it.
Graham leaves with a sailor.
I intend to keep you to myself for the rest of the afternoon.
Oh?
And for the next 2 weeks.
Oh.
When a lonely prospector strikes gold, he doesn't yell for his friends. He stakes a claim.
Oh.
How about some lunch?
Yes, I'd love it.
I don't like to make love on an empty stomach.
No, neither do I. Especially to a perfect stranger.
My Ellen, wherever did you get the idea that I was perfect?
She opens a picnic hamper.
Would you like to switch boxes like we did when we were kids?
Naturally.
He gives her a small box as he opens the hamper.
Fried chicken, potato salad, tomatoes, cookies. Oh.
She opens the box.
Day rations, canned ham, powdered milk, chewing gum, and 4 cigarettes.
Coffee.
Honestly, is that the best you could do?
That's the best I could do with no ration card.
Oh.
Now, if we were to combine forces, pool our resources, I think we might do very well together.
She gazes at him hesitantly. Later, on an airstrip, Ellen and Graham see off George.
Bye, George, and good luck. Thanks, man.
Goodbye, darling.
Ellen and George kiss passionately.
Take care of yourself.
I'll be back, honey. Remember that, I'll be back.
Of course. Of course.
And I'll never let you go.
Over her shoulder, he gives a self-satisfied smile to Graham.
Goodbye, darling.
As George saunters away, Ellen watches with fear and longing, and Graham watches with concern.
Quite a guy.
Yeah, quite a guy. I'm going to marry him, Ray. I'm going to marry him just as soon as he gets back.
I figured as much. Are you sure he's right for you, Ellen?
Well, I don't know. Something you think about, it's just something you feel, you know. You can't do anything about it.
I don't know what you mean, Ellen. The guy with wings has it all over us fellas who walk around down here.
They watch George fly away. The memory fades as Ellen remains holding the vacuum in her living room, gazing up the stairs. She turns off the vacuum and unplugs it.
I'm coming up now, dear. Do you want me to bring you anything?
No.
George takes off his glasses and stuffs the letter, the tablet, and his pen in a side table drawer. Then weakens as Ellen walks in.
You all right?
What is it? What's the matter?
Get a doctor.
She hurries to pour medicine in a spoon.
No, not that. Get a doctor. Another doctor, not Graham.
But I have to, dear. He is your doctor.
Don't argue with me. Don't call Graham. Get another doctor.
Setting down the medicine, she rushes out of the bedroom. Later, on their quiet residential street, a convertible pulls up to the curb in front of the house. Graham gets out of the car and shuts the door, then carries his black doctor's bag through the front gate and up the walkway to the house. Ellen lets him in, and he immediately goes up the stairs. Ellen follows him to the bedroom. They enter.
Medicine, but I made him take it.
Good girl.
Setting down the bag, he steps to the side of George's bed, while Ellen steps to the other side, caressing her husband's head. Graham puts a stethoscope to George's chest.
Still ticking. Sounds pretty good. You're evidently feeling better than when Ellen called. What time is it?
9:05, dear.
Took you a long time to get here, Rennie.
Oh, I know it seems like it, but he came just as soon as I called him.
How long did it take?
About 20 minutes. Fortunately, Ellen caught me as I was leaving on another call.
Yes.
Is there some alcohol in the bathroom?
Yes, sir.
20 minutes.
Graham goes to an adjoining bathroom.
I got that pain over 45 minutes ago. Why did you delay it?
I didn't, dear. I lost a lot of time trying to get another doctor. But you needed him so badly, I had to.
You know best. You always know best nowadays, don't you, Ellen?
No, it isn't that. I just knew that he'd come sooner than anyone else. He's our friend, George.
Graham returns with a thermometer.
Oh, it's better already. Rennie, let's not kid each other. We both know where I stand. My own insurance company wouldn't put a nickel on me.
Now, look here.
He puts the thermometer in George's mouth.
Automobile taking an unexpected turn. A brick falling from a high building. Heart condition like yours. They're all hazards, but that doesn't necessarily mean they'll ever happen. Think of all the chances you took during the war. You didn't worry about them. Came out feeling better when you went in. Now, the only thing you have to do is lie here in bed and let us help you get well. Isn't that right, Ellen?
Yes, that's what I keep telling him.
You're lucky in many ways, George.
He takes out the thermometer.
You have a wonderful wife. She's developed into a fine nurse.
I don't think I'll be tying up her exclusive services much longer.
Now, you've got to cut out this way of thinking.
Yeah, I know.
Would you mind, Ellen? I'd like to talk to George alone.
No, of course not. I'll be across the hall if you need me.
She leaves.
Those were pretty morbid things you were saying in front of Ellen.
Has she complained?
Certainly not. But you got to think of her, too. She's looking a little worn. Now, when you get these ideas, try using a little mental therapy.
Next, you'll be telling me I ought to see a psychiatrist.
Might be a very good idea.
You doctors are all alike. You can't cure a patient, you tell him it's all in his mind.
I'm trying to help you, George. You know that.
Graham steps to his bag.
I'll drop in again this afternoon. Maybe we can talk this thing out.
Yeah, maybe we can.
Picking up his bag, Graham leaves the room. George smirks. Graham leads Ellen down the stairs.
Ellen, did anything particular happen to upset George this morning?
No, not that I know of. Why, do you think he's worse?
Frankly, I don't like his mental state.
Well, I think maybe it's just the hot weather. The breath is there.
He's been a very active man. It's natural for him to be depressed, but...
Yes.
When a man's at a low ebb mentally and physically, he's prone to all sorts of imaginary fears.
Yes, I know.
I'd feel better if he were in the hospital for a while.
No, I don't think so.
Well, you want what's best for George, don't you?
Well, of course, that's just it. I think it would upset him terribly. You see, he doesn't seem to want anyone else around him except me. Well, this morning he didn't even want me to call you. Oh, it isn't that he's disloyal, Ran, or has lost confidence, but lately he seems to have taken these sudden dislikes to people.
Graham steps to the door.
Look, Ellen.
Yes?
You and George aren't just patients, you're friends. George is up there brooding, and I don't like it. Could develop into something serious. If you won't send him to the hospital, I want you to have someone here to help you.
They go outside.
I'm sure you know what's best, Ran, but honestly, I don't know how George will take it. Well, he doesn't even seem to want his aunt around anymore.
Ellen, I don't think it's wise for you to try to handle this alone any longer. You're stressed to the breaking point already. I'll take it up with George this afternoon.
All right. I better get back upstairs.
No, Ellen. Let him relax for a while.
Oh, all right.
Give the medicine a chance to work.
Yeah.
I want you to relax, too.
As they walk to his car, George watches from the bedroom window. Graham gets into the car.
Remember now, you could call me anytime you need me, even if you just think you need me.
Oh, thanks. I don't know what I'd do sometimes if I didn't remember that.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
You're doing fine.
Thanks.
Graham drives away. Ellen turns to go back to the house, crossing the path of a little boy in a cowboy outfit on a tricycle.
Stand where you are. Don't move.
Oh, you frightened me.
Did I?
Yeah. Say, what are you all dressed up for? And where did you get that beautiful new tricycle?
It's no tricycle. It's a horse.
Oh?
A Palomino. My grandpa gave it to me.
Oh, he did? Well, it's beautiful, Billy.
I'm not Billy. I'm Hoppy.
Hoppy? Now, who's Hoppy?
Don't you know who Hoppy is?
No, I'm afraid
don't
I don't.
Don't you have television?
What?
Don't you have television?
No.
Want to see mine?
Sure.
He pulls out a little toy television.
Look inside.
Well, look at that.
Hoppy's there, too. Just like in a real color.
Why, of course, I know him. That's Hopalong Cassidy.
Uh-huh.
Well, saved many people today, Hoppy?
Oh, 60 or 100. Don't try any tricks now.
Oh, I wouldn't think of it.
Do you have any cookies?
No, I haven't. See, the groceryman hasn't come yet, but I will have later.
You know what I do with a bad man?
No, what do you do?
I dynamite him into little pieces, shot him, put him in jail.
Oh, I don't think the real Hoppy would treat even bad men that way.
Well, really what I did was lasso him, tie him up, throw him in jail.
Well, that sounds like a lot more work, and more dangerous, too.
Had to take care of you, didn't I?
Yeah, you sure did.
Can I come in?
She steps through the gate.
Oh, well, honey, I'm sorry. I'm afraid not. My husband isn't feeling very well today. See?
I won't make any noise. If I was eating cookies, I couldn't even talk.
No, you couldn't. Well, I'll tell you what you do. After the groceryman comes, or that'll be around 12 o'clock, see, you come to the back door very quietly, and I'll have some cookies for you. Okay?
She picks up the newspaper.
I'll ride my horse up and down and see that no bad people make any noise. Because I'm your friend, aren't I?
That's right, Hoppy. You're my friend.
Beep, beep. I'm an engine.
As Billy rides away, Ellen turns back to the house and notices curtains moving in the bedroom window. Glancing after Billy, confused, she hurries to the front door. Soon after, she finds George sleeping in bed. Careful not to wake him, she crosses the room to the window and checks the curtains as he opens his eyes. She turns to him.
Well, George, you weren't out of bed just now, were you?
No.
Oh, it must be the heat. I could have sworn I saw somebody right...
What took you so
long? What, dear?
What took you so long?
Sorry, dear. I was talking to Billy. I should say Hoppy. Let me change your pillow. Yeah, he's the little boy I told you about who just moved into the neighborhood.
She props him up with a fresh pillow.
The one with the glasses, you know. Oh, he's an awful sweet little kid.
What were you talking to Ranny Graham about? That's what I'm interested in.
We were talking about you, dear. He thinks you worry too much about yourself.
If I didn't, I don't know who would.
Making her bed, she pauses, then continues.
George, ever since you got out of bed yesterday to see if you could walk, I've had it on my mind. I want you to promise me not to get out of bed again while I'm out of the room.
All right, Eleanor. Did you call the druggist about getting the heart prescription filled?
Yes, dear. He said he'd send it up later in the day. But there's enough there if we need it before.
Did you tell him I'd spilled it?
No, I didn't. Do you feel well enough for the paper?
Yeah.
She unrolls it.
Editorial page?
No, just the front page is all right, thank you.
She hands it to him.
There you are, dear.
Then steps away awkwardly.
You look tired, Ellen.
Oh, I'm not. Just that it's so hot today.
He peers at her.
What are you thinking about, Ellen?
Well, you know, I was just thinking that everything in our lives, every breath, every thought, has been for ourselves. I don't think people can do that and be happy. Do you?
You're getting a little confused, darling. It was me that Rennie Graham told to change my way of thinking.
Oh, no. I mean, it was my fault, too. I just wasn't strong enough to help you. But we could change all that now.
Ellen.
Couldn't make all the difference in the world, George.
Come here, Ellen.
Yes?
She sits on the bed beside him.
What's the first thing you do?
When?
When I'm out of this bed again, away from the house.
Just be so grateful that you're well. I think I'd try to do something to somebody.
I mean you. For your own self.
Oh. I'd like children.
Yeah.
Yes. And then I'd like a garden. A real garden. Like the woman next door has. And I'd find out about flowers and things. And I'd compare notes with every other woman on the block.
So you'd have a garden and children, huh?
Oh, isn't it good to plan again? Kind of gives you something to hold on to, doesn't it? Oh, my, it takes a long time for things to sink in, doesn't it? But you always said that, George. You always said, make a plan for everything and then stick to it. All right. All right, our plan now is for you to get well. And then after...
You must think I'm very stupid.
Stupid?
Don't you think I know you're in love with him?
In love with whom?
Graham.
Well, that's the silliest thing I ever heard of you.
You're not as subtle as you think you are, Ellen. It's quite obvious.
First, I thought it was just an infatuation, but now I realize it's more serious. Serious to the point where my life is more in danger from your heart than mine.
George, what are you talking about?
I almost feel sorry for you, Ellen. He overrated you, Ellen, just as he underrated me. You haven't the courage or the intelligence he thinks you have.
Please don't.
She stands.
You suppose I don't know he told you to rake over these old coals this morning?
No, dear, he didn't.
You convinced me I was a failure by making me impossible promises. I know something about my own sickness. I know what happens,
George,
to a man when you take away his self-respect.
George,
I know what happens when you constantly upset
George, me. George, this is wrong. I know it is. Please don't upset yourself anymore. Please.
That's what he told you to do, isn't it? Did he also tell you to delay getting help to me like you did this morning? How could you do that, Ellen? How could you take a man of second-rate intelligence
George,
like
dear,
that?
We'll do anything you say. I'll get another doctor.
You didn't know what you were letting yourself in for, did you, Ellen?
Please don't talk anymore.
His eyes drift closed. And as he relaxes, she runs her hand over his hair.
Rest. Rest. Oh, George, you just couldn't believe those things you've said about Dr. Graham.
I don't even want to hear his name.
She pulls back her hand. Shaking her head slightly, she straightens up. She walks back to the window and starts to pull down the shade.
Leave it halfway up, Ellen.
She obeys. She picks up a breakfast tray from the top of a chest of drawers and takes them to the door, where she stops and looks at George.
I was so hurt I could hardly keep from crying. But again, I reminded myself that George was terribly ill and he didn't mean it.
Maintaining her composure, she opens the door and steps into the hall. With one more look, she leaves, and he opens his eyes. He puts on his glasses and reaches for his tablet, pen, and more sheets of paper. He flips through the pages of his letter, then pulls himself to sit up more and reads over one of the pages. An hour ago, they tried again. When I refused the medicine she forced me, I asked her to get the doctor. She delayed. I told her not to get Dr. Graham, but she did. They had a long talk alone. I'm sure he told her what to do to bring on an attack. He pulls out the first page of the letter, addressed to the District Attorney of Los Angeles, California, and rereads it. Later, Ellen carries a box of groceries into the kitchen.
I knew I had to keep doing something, anything. Anything to keep me from hearing George's words. He didn't mean them. He couldn't mean them. It was his illness, the heat. And when I took his lunch up to him, I'd be pleasant and cheerful as if nothing had happened.
She drops one of the cans she's putting in the cupboard as Billy pokes his head through the open back door.
Hey!
Oh, hi, Hoppy.
Shh. What's the matter?
He points upstairs.
Oh, you don't have to whisper now. He's awake. I was just fixing his lunch. Did you come for your cookies?
Bobby just left the bag. But I've already had my lunch.
You're not begging. I want to give them to you. There you are. Take the tray.
But he takes one.
Hey, are you catching a cold in this weather?
You sound just like my mom. No, I'm not.
Oh.
I could do something, too.
He hands her a bag.
A present for me?
Uh-huh.
Oh, Hoppy, how nice of it. I wonder what this could be.
She pulls out the toy television.
Oh, that's very nice. Are you sure you don't want to keep it yourself?
We got a big television at home. A real one. This is just a pretend one.
Well, I know it is, but it's very nice, and I want to thank you very much for giving it to me.
She stirs a pot on the stove.
Mommy says television's good for when you're sick.
Mm.
Daddy says it makes him sick.
Oh.
Mommy lets me look at television, so I stay in bed.
Well, I think that's a very good idea.
She gets some milk from the refrigerator.
I'll have to tell my husband about that.
Can I see him? I can play with him if he can't go outside.
Oh, well, that's very nice of you, but I don't think he's well enough to see people there.
She pours milk into the pot.
I won't make any noise. I'll just eat my cookies and look.
Well, perhaps in a week or two when he's feeling better, huh?
Okay. My horse is sick. I gotta go see my horse.
Okay.
As she puts the milk back in the refrigerator and reaches into her cutlery drawer, she notices Billy taking two big handfuls of cookies from the box.
Can I take some cookies for my horse?
Oh, by all means, take as many as you like.
I'll go see my horse now.
All right. Say, honey, are you sure you don't want to take that television set with you?
The man can use it, but tell him not to break it, because I gotta use it later.
Well, all right, I'll tell him. And thank you again, Hoppy.
Bye.
Bye.
He carefully closes the back door with his arms so he doesn't drop the cookies.
I always felt better after talking with Hoppy. I wondered how he'd look without his glasses.
She picks up the toy TV.
Ah, the nice thing of that kid to do. Don't break it because I have to use it again.
She sets the TV down.
George wanted his lunch. That was a good sign.
Soon after, Ellen carries George's lunch tray, which includes the toy TV, upstairs. She enters the bedroom, where George still wears his glasses and holds an envelope.
Hungry?
Yes, as a matter of fact, I am.
He takes off the glasses.
Feeling much better.
Oh. Hoppy sent you a present. Television set.
She hands it to him.
And he says not to break it because he has to use it later.
You two are getting to be great pals.
He sets it aside.
Yes, he's a darling little kid. He's so eager to please.
Oh, honey, not now, huh?
all right. But at least you're going to have clean hands and face before you eat.
Putting some towels back into a large chest of drawers,
Ellen,
she goes back into the bathroom.
Postman come yet?
What'd you say, dear?
Postman, has he come yet?
Oh, no. No, he's very late today.
She returns with another towel and a washcloth.
It must be the heat.
Give him this letter when he comes, please.
Dear, I thought you were resting.
She wipes his neck and face with the washcloth.
A relief to get that written. New insurance law affects the Emerson estate. I've got to check over.
All right, dear, all right.
She dries him with the towel.
I'll meet him at the gate. Give it to him myself.
She wipes and dries his hands.
Sure.
Picking up the tray, she sets it down over his lap.
There you are.
Looks good.
Yeah, it is good.
She turns to go.
Oh, Ellen. Letter.
Oh, sorry.
She takes it and puts the towel in the laundry.
And if you finish before I get back, don't try to put that tray on the floor. You remember what happened the last time?
Uh-huh.
As she goes to the door.
Hey, you really wrote a letter, didn't you?
He looks at her pointedly. She leaves the room. Going down the stairs, she fans herself with the letter and glances at it. She steps out the front door and wanders down the walk, looking around.
I wanted to stop a minute and chat with the neighbors, but I knew George wouldn't like it.
She stops at the gate.
He didn't believe in neighbors. And then I saw the postman.
Stepping through the gate, she approaches him as he walks away from a neighbor's house, where the neighbor tends to some plants out front.
You!
They turn to another neighbor.
When do you think this heat's going to break?
Good morning, Mr.
Darcy. Oh, good morning, Mrs. Jones.
Certainly is hot, isn't it?
Oh, it sure is, especially with this mailbag.
Looks heavy, all right.
Now, if I'm all in now, I wonder what I'm going to be like this afternoon. Well, I guess I'll live.
Yeah.
Everything's so high, I've got to keep my nose to the grindstone.
Yeah.
Got a pension plan. Did I tell you about it?
Yes, you did.
Well, you got to follow it to a T. Every penny counts.
Yeah.
You know, my wife doesn't understand that. She says I'm an old penny pincher.
No.
But I told her that...
Mr. Carson, would you take this letter for me, please?
He does.
Thanks.
I'll swear, I bring in more mail than I take out.
Well, I'm sorry. I'd run up to the mailbox with it myself, but I don't like to leave the house so long with my husband being ill and all, you know.
No, it never figures how it slows me up, lugging everybody's mail around this awful heat.
I'm sorry.
My feet are throbbing. Your feet ever...
Yeah, I know just what you mean.
You know, I ought to be way out in Pine Avenue and Merritt Street, but noon, with the way I'm going, I won't be out there till 1 o'clock.
Sorry.
But with everybody giving me mail to take back.
Is that mail for me?
Huh?
That mail, is it mine?
Oh, yeah.
He gives her the mail in his hand.
All right.
It's that retirement plan that keeps me going.
Yeah, I bet it is. Well, thanks again, Mr. Carson.
You're welcome.
She turns back to the house.
Well, glad to see your husband's well enough to be up, Mrs. Jones. Goodbye.
Curtains move in the window.
I wish I could lie down for a while.
As Ellen rushes back to the house, George takes a pistol out of the large chest of drawers and hurries back to bed. Dropping the mail on a table, she runs up the stairs. He's sitting propped up in bed when she enters the room.
Oh, George, you were out of bed. And you promised me you wouldn't.
You know, I can't get out of bed in my condition.
Dear, the postman said he saw you at the window.
Did he really?
Well, no, he didn't actually say he saw you.
The postman's got a touch of sunstroke.
Yeah, me too, I guess.
She opens the window.
Oh, hot wind certainly doesn't help much. You finished?
It's very nice, thank you.
She picks up the tray.
I'm glad you got that letter off.
And sets it on the floor.
Come over here, Ellen. Sit down.
She sits on the bed beside him, and they share a smile.
Would you like your Aunt Clara to come up and visit for a little while today?
It's pretty hot for the old girl.
Oh, she'd love it if you asked for her. You're the apple of her eye, you know.
I always was. You know, Aunt Clara gave me a toy when I was a kid. Toy I was crazy about. My mother used to tell her she gave me too much, but I can still remember that toy.
Oh.
It was a bottle with a small, absolutely perfect sailing ship built inside of it. You know, I was...
She gets up.
I was so crazy about that toy, I wouldn't let anybody touch it.
Oh?
Not even my mother.
She takes a comb to the bed.
One day I was making a garden in the house.
She combs his hair.
Making a garden in the backyard. neighbor boy came running out of my house with my ship in his hand. Somehow I got it away from him without breaking it.
He gently pulls her down to sit again.
I don't know what I said to him, but he looked awfully scared and white. And suddenly I was frightened too, thinking he might have broken it, the ship, I mean. I picked up the little rake I'd been playing with and began hitting him with it. And when his face had been so white, it was all blood.
He keeps a hand on her shoulder.
I think I might have killed him if Mother hadn't come out. She took him into the house and into the bathroom and washed his face. They were both so excited that I felt safe. I had my little ship again.
He takes his hand off of her.
When the neighbor boy stopped crying, Mother turned to me and she said, "Give it to him."
Ellen looks at him nervously.
She sounded so strange and quiet, I knew I had to. He held out his hand. I could see he hadn't learned anything, so I handed him the ship. But just as he was about to take it, I let it drop on the tile floor and I stepped on it. He'd never have known what it was, but somehow or other it was mine. Mine more than it had ever been before. I remembered every little perfect thing about that ship. But then it was just a mess of broken glass and matchsticks on the bathroom floor.
Disturbed, she moves to stand.
Ellen.
But stops.
You know who that neighbor boy looked like?
He pulls her closer.
You know, very much like Graham. Your Dr. Graham was going to find himself in exactly the same position as that little boy.
We're not going to have him here again. But that doesn't change the fact that you're wrong about him. He's been wonderful to you, so thoughtful and given you so much time.
Maybe that's because he's a bachelor, huh? No home life.
He caresses her cheek.
He's been a good friend to us.
Ellen, time's limited, so you must listen carefully. Randy Graham may have you all right, but he'll be disappointed with what he gets.
He loosely holds her throat.
George, please.
She stands.
George, I can't let you talk this way anymore.
She tries to pour some water into a glass, but the pitcher is empty.
I'll fill this up.
When she takes the pitcher to the bathroom sink, George gets out of bed and labors to stand. He staggers to the bedroom door and locks it. Leaning on the large chest of drawers, he makes his way back to his bed, gets in, and pulls a sheet over himself. Ellen returns with the full pitcher and pours a glass of water, which she puts on a bedside table.
I'll be downstairs if you want me.
You'd better wait, Ellen. I've written the district attorney asking him to make a complete investigation if anything happens to me today before he can get help to me.
Why do you torture yourself like this? Why do you imagine things that don't exist?
That letter exists. It proves you're trying to kill me.
But I'm not. I'm not. If I can't help you, George, then I'm going to get someone else in who can.
It's not me that needs help now, Ellen. You gave that letter to the postman yourself just a while ago.
Yes, I gave him the letter, the one that you wrote about insurance policies.
I knew you wouldn't recognize a district attorney's name if you saw it. Nobody ever does. Isn't that strange? Everybody knows he's a district attorney, but nobody ever knows his name.
We are going to get someone else in, another doctor, because this is all in your mind.
My mind is fine. Just to reassure you on that point, let me tell you that letter was about insurance. I told the district attorney how much insurance we had on each other's lives. And if either one of us died, the other would do very nicely for the rest of his life. Or her life, very comfortably indeed.
Oh.
I also told him how you and Dr. Graham, how you were working together to aggravate my condition so it wouldn't look like murder.
George!
I also told him how you were gradually giving me overdoses of the heart medicine.
But that isn't true. Anyone would know that isn't true.
Would they? Why is that bottle almost empty, huh? We only got it the other day.
Well, you told me that you spilled it on the tray. You told me that yourself, George.
You didn't tell the druggist that. Oh, Mr. Phillips will make an excellent witness against you, Ellen. You'll be the first if anything happens to me. And let me tell you, there'll be others. The letter takes care of everything. The druggist, the medicine, the doctor, he's in it too. Oh, you've implicated your old friend Graham, you know.
Nothing's going to happen to you.
I don't know whether you're doing this to frighten me or not, but I'm going downstairs and get that letter back from that postman.
You're not going any place anymore, Ellen. Because I'm going to kill you.
He aims the gun at her.
Yeah, I decided that definitely this morning.
She tries to open the locked door. Then turns to him, terrified.
You couldn't mean this, George. You couldn't. George, you know I wouldn't hurt anybody. Anybody, much less you.
He slowly climbs out of bed.
George, think. It's me. It's Ellen. It's Ellen.
But you did want to be rid of me. It was in your mind. That's why you feel so guilty, isn't it?
No.
The letter will take care of Graham. I'll take care of you myself. I'll make it look like self-defense.
Please don't.
He stands.
There are just too many things against you, Ellen.
You used to say that you were lonesome until you met me. George. George, you love me. I love you, George.
And since I've been sick, since he's been coming to the house, you've hated the sight of me.
No, I haven't.
Glaring with fury, he suddenly hunches over. He collapses onto his bed. With her back against the wall, she stares open-mouthed. She pulls at the door desperately.
Key.
She stops short at the bed.
It was one of those awful dreams. The kind I used to have when George was overseas.
Finding the key on the floor, she springs back up with it.
That man lying there was George. My husband. He was dead. He died trying to kill me.
As the phone rings, she hurries to unlock the door. Then she makes her way down the hall and starts down the stairs. She pauses, gripping the banister. So, will Ellen answer that phone? Though, really, that's the least of her worries, isn't it? Find out next time on Movies for the Blind. George was played by Barry Sullivan, who might not have starred in his own TV series like his movie wife Loretta Young, but he got way more work guest starring in all sorts of TV series of the 60s and 70s, from Bonanza to Ben Casey to Mission Impossible to Marcus Welby, M.D. to Hawaii Five-0 to The Love Boat and Little House on the Prairie and dozens in between. But for this movie, he's gone, and we'll be following our heroine the rest of the way next week. For more information and links about the movies, about description, and how to subscribe, check the blog, moviesfortheblind.com, where you can also find out about this podcast's Creative Commons license. The movies are from the Internet Archive, which is also the host for this podcast, so please support universal access to human knowledge by visiting and donating at www.archive.org. Thank you for downloading and for listening. Be back next week. Take care.